he gets an undedication, and we're going to dedicate the Sikha to Yitzi Warren. For reasons to be disclosed in secret a little later, we'll dedicate this Sikha to Mr. Blumkin, Shlita. And to Avi Chansky. Okay, so we got about 35 or so minutes, and I have two sikhot that I want to give. So I'm going to try and squeeze them in. I have two things I want to share with you. We'll see how it ties into the dedicatees momentarily. But we parshas Vayigash. So we have Yaakov Avinu finally comes down and joins the rest of the family in Mitzrayim. And it's amazing. There's an amazing pasuk over here, which I like to say over this idea. Yosef is very excited to see Yaakov. They embrace, they reunite. And Vayava Yosef is Yaakov Aviv, and Yosef excitedly brings Yaakov in front of Paro. Vayavarech Yaakov is Paro. Yaakov blesses Paro. Vayomer Paro Yaakov. And Paro says to Yaakov, Kama yimei shnei chayecha? How old are you? Vayomer Yaakov. And Yaakov says back, O Paro, yimei shnei megurai shloshimat shana. I'm 130 years. Ma'at. Short years. Viraim. Not the strongest of years. Ho yimei shnei chayai. Velo hisigu es yimei shnei chayai avosai bimei megurayim. And I have not reached the years of my father, my grandfather. My father lived till 147. My father lived till 180. My grandfather lived till 175. I have not reached those years. So Yaakov is asked how old he is. He says, I'm 130. Ma'at. Viraim. It's not been the best of times. And I haven't reached the years of my father. My father and grandfather. So there's a medrash. There's a medrash of the Das Zaken and Balei Atos. It's found in the old Mikros Gedolos. And it says over here that for this answer that Yaakov gave, which is a little bit on the negative side, it's a little bit of a kvetch. So, and of course, Yaakov on his level, of course, but there's a little negativity over here. So because of this, the Medrash says Yaakov lost years of his life. Yaakov lost years of his life. And indeed, Yaakov's correct. He had a tough life. And if anyone thinks about Yaakov's life, when did Yaakov's struggles begin? How old was he? He was about minus 2-3 months old. His struggles began with Esav in the womb. And then he emerged from the womb and he has battles with Esav as a youngster. And then after he deals with Esav, he's got to deal with Lavan. And he's got to deal with losing Yosef. And he's got to deal with a lot, Dina getting raped. He's got to deal with a lot of very, very difficult trials and tribulations. So he's right. He's absolutely right. His answer is 100% honest and accurate. His years have been tough. And Hashem says, yeah, maybe. But Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, did I not save you from Esav? I saved you from Esav. Did we not overcome together Lavan? Yeah, we did that. Did I not restore Dina back to you? Yes, we did that. And are you now not reunited with Yosef, your son? Yes, you are. So, and you are Va'ata Misroim Achayim Shem Ma'at Veron. And because you're complaining? Every trial and tribulation that you got, we together overcame. Overcame Esav, overcame Laban, overcame Dina, overcame Yosef, and you're still upset? So the Medrash says that Yaakov lost 1 year of his life for every single word of this answer. And he was supposed to live for as long as his father Yitzhak lived. Yitzhak lived to the ripe old age of 180. Yaakov was supposed to live that long. However, because of Yaakov's answer, Ma'at V'Roim, he loses 1 year per word of his answer. So how many words are in this answer? Yaakov's going to die 147 years old. So how many words are in this answer? 33. So for a 33-word answer, he's going to lose 1 year of his life. That's the Medrash. Nice Medrash. One problem. Little problem with the Medrash. The problem with the Medrash is if you count the words in his answer, What you're going to find is it does not add up to 33. His answer had 25 words, not 33. So you're missing 8 words. And the Mefarshim are bothered, the Balei Musar are bothered, where are those missing 8 words? And the answer is obvious. And Rav Chaim Shmuel Levitz in the Sichos Musar explains that he's also punished for Paro's question. Vayomer Paro el Yaakov, kama yemei shnei chayecha. Paro asked him how old he is. It's the first thing Paro says to him. Not a shalom aleichem, not how was your trip, how was your flight, no, none of that. How old are you? Why is Yaakov taken to task on his level for the question that Paro asks? Because apparently, Yaakov's countenance, his appearance, his way, also showed his age. And therefore, Paro asked the question, whoa, there's someone who's like, had a tough life over here, how old are you? It was like striking to him. And therefore, Yaakov, again, Chazal want to teach us this lesson, that Yaakov's going to be taken to task, not only for his answer, for the words that he says, but for how he carried himself, for his approach, the way he was standing, if you will. There is a Harry Potter set of characters called Dementors. I've only read one Harry Potter book, and it was many years ago, but I reminded myself, Dementors, I just looked it up today. Dementors are dark creatures. They feed on human happiness. They generate feelings of depression and despair in any person that is close to them. They bring darkness to the environment. And that's what Dementors are. And as I think about this medrash and the message that it's trying to tell us, and I think about Dementors, I think about people. People. And there are people that in any environment that they're in, they bring positive energy. They bring excitement. They bring smiles. They bring simcha. They bring positivity to the environments that they're in. And then you have other people that come to their environments, they come with cynicism, with sarcasm, with perhaps a dour expression, a dour face. And that brings a dementor-like type of atmosphere to the room. Now, I have a Talmud by Shir, not going to tell you who, it's a very chashuv Talmud. But every so often I ask him how he's doing. And his answer is, okay, I'm okay. Not a bad answer, not a bad answer. And we were talking this morning, in fact, about what should be a person's baseline. And he shared with me that that's the baseline. Okay is the baseline. And then you go from there. And I tried to share, and I'll share with the other one, that it seems to me that at least in Torah Hashkafa, that's not the baseline. The baseline is not okay. Chazal tell us, Mishenichnas Adar Marbin Besimcha. Mishenichnas Av Mimatin Besimcha. When you get to Adar, you elevate Simcha. When you get to Av, you reduce Simcha. Which means, what's the baseline? The baseline is Simcha. That's the baseline. The baseline is to be in a good mood, is to be positive, is to be energized. The reason I wanted to dedicate the Sicha today to Aaron Tuckman is because anytime I ask him how he's doing, I always get one answer. I can predict the answer. It's always one answer. It's always amazing. I'm not sure he's always doing amazing. He probably is not always doing amazing. A couple weeks ago, he was in the emergency room. I suspect he wasn't doing amazing. But his answers are always amazing. And positive energy, positive gait, a positive countenance is a midah that I think is absolutely something to think about and something critical. Rabbi Fran tells a story of in the 1990s in Texas, when people were getting into like healthy eating, healthy meats, lean meats, he tells a story that there was this group of farmers in Texas that decided it was time to like come up with a new meat that would be healthier, leaner, better. And they started to raise emus. What is an emu? E-M-U. An emu is a, basically, it's part of the ostrich family. It's the second largest bird in the world. And apparently, they are, they have very lean meat. Tastes good, healthy, low cholesterol, all the things you're looking for in high protein, low fat, good eating. So they started to raise emus, and it became a thing. And a pair of breeding emus would cost $45,000. Like, it was a thing. And the Honda company decided one day to make a commercial. Rabbi Fran tells a story. And in this commercial, they wanted to basically say, in life, you have no choice but to buy an Accord. Like, that's what you got to do. You got to buy a Honda Accord. And to catch some of the attention, the listeners' attention, they kind of played off, like, there's certain things that are just so obvious that you don't do. You buy an Accord, that's what you do. But there's certain things you just don't do. And they started mocking certain professions. And one of the professions they started mocking is emu farming. Like, who would do that? Imagine some people think that emus are actually going to replace real beef. Come on. Only hicks from Texas, from Plano, would actually believe that emus are going to replace cattle. This is not going to happen. It's a ridiculous idea. And the way Rabbi Fran tells the story is that commercial, the cynicism, sarcasm, and negativity of that commercial, basically in a week's time, killed the emu industry. And shortly thereafter, apparently, again, as he tells the story, a pair of breeding emus went down in value from $45,000 to $500. All because of negative energy, sarcasm, cynicism. And Chazal tells the first kapitel in Tehillim, B'moshav leitzim al teshev. And leitzamas, negativity, cynicism, sarcasm, can do so much damage to an atmosphere. Perhaps the climactic, cynical people were Amalek. And when the Jews are on the high of Yetzias Mitzrayim, spiritual high, a sense of awe in Hashem and invincibility, comes along Amalek and tries to undermine that. And they attack the Jewish people, not for political reasons, not for territorial reasons, not for ideological reasons, only because of their cynicism. To undercut, to undermine. Perhaps you've all been in Shiurim, a Musar Shmuz, where Rebbe's got everyone's attention, everyone's locked in, everyone's focused, everyone is being moved, and some wise guy in the back, one crack, one line, kills the atmosphere, undercuts, undermines cynicism. Modern day politics, if any connection to any sense of what's been going on in modern day elections over the past 10 years, not just this year, is all negativity, is all cynicism, sarcasm, undercutting, fatalism. Even as the world perhaps moves towards a vaccine and perhaps moves towards, in the next couple of months, hopefully, putting some of this COVID craziness behind us. But you have all of these naysayers, cynics. It's all a conspiracy. Vaccines don't work. All these, they're just coming to get you. All of this kind of approach. And I will even say that some of you, perhaps many of you, were in Yerushalayim today. And it's going to be very easy for those of you who either saw videos or experienced personally. We're out there, we're inconvenienced by the absolute nonsense that was going on today in Yerushalayim. When I say nonsense, I mean this form of so-called protest, this form of so-called civil disobedience is nonsense, is ridiculous. But the question is, like, what do you take from it? Do you take from it that, Israel is such a terrible country, that these Jews who are dressed this way are such horrible people? If your takeaway is all negative, as I was driving back from Yerushalayim this afternoon, pre the nonsense and ridiculous things that are going on, but my wife and I had a beautiful day. We're riding out of Yerushalayim and just looking at the hills, hills of Mevaseret, hills, the valleys of Yerushalayim, as I saw Tzvi Simchon's status this afternoon. Seeing the beauty, the special things, and to go ahead and if we fall into the trap of, yes, we're going to experience negative things, there's no doubt about it. And you're going to experience negative people in your life. You're going to experience negative episodes, 100%. And here I'm being very careful, perhaps not careful, but I'm drawing this off of the Medrash about Yaakov. And I'm not here to, I'm just jumping off of Yaakov. Yaakov is on his level. He had a little bit of negativity. But to go ahead and approach life and identify and focus on negatives, focus on sarcasm, focus on, look at these people, and look at this, and look at that. To have that kind of approach is going to be very hurtful. It's going to hurt you. It's not a healthy way to live. And yes, I'm sure many of us were inconvenienced. And I'm not sanctioning what went on at all. There's no justification. Zero. But don't let that color your vision of people that wear black and white, of people that live in Israel, of the country. Do not let it color that, because it'll be distortive and it'll hurt you. It's not in your interest to do that. I will tell you, I'm very proud of, and I'm excited. You know, there's this Thank You Hashem movement out there, which as I was preparing, I put on the Niggun, and I, on double speed, because I was in a rush today, but I just, you know, there's a video that in the Joey Newcomb Thank You Hashem YouTube, there's a video, and the video expresses the core message, and yes, you will be stuck in traffic in your life, I promise you. Not just today, and not just in this country, and not just because of hooligans, but because of a lot of different reasons. You'll be stuck in traffic. And you may one day lose a job. It could happen. And there might be other inconveniences, illnesses, what have you. These things do happen. But the more you can see the good in other people, the more you can see the good in yourself, the more that you can see how great you can be, envision your greatness. And the more you can say, thank you, Hashem, even when you're stuck. But you're in Israel. You're breathing. You're healthy. You're in yeshiva. You have friends. You have family. Overall, when 99% of the things work so well, and yes, there are hiccups, and problems arise, and we get fixated on the negativity, and we bring negative energy, we're living unhealthy lives. It's a beautiful, beautiful story that's told over. Reb Lazer Silver was one of the Gedolei Yisrael. He lived in America. He was one of the founding fathers of the Aguda, a Talmud of Rav Chaim Olzer Grozhansky in Europe. Was a Rav in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and then in Ohio, and was very involved in the 50s and late 40s with Holocaust survivors, DP camps, and working in that area. And once he was visiting a DP camp, and in the DP camp, he sees a Jew, and the Jew is angry. And he says, I'm never going to pray again in my life. I will never pick up a sitter for as long as I live. And Rabbi Silver, Rav Lazer Silver, said, what happened? Why? And he answered this Jew. in the camps, there was another Jew who had a sitter. And he wouldn't let anyone use that sitter. The only people he would let use that sitter was if they gave him a half a day's rations. In the camps, then he'd let you use the sitter. And I was so angry. This is what a religious Jew does. When someone wants to daven, when someone wants to use a sitter, you're only going to barter your sitter on loan for a half a day's rations. If this is what religious Jews do, I'm out. I want no part of it. And Reb Lazer Silver smiled. And he said, yeah, it's terrible. But what about all of the religious Jews that were willing to give up a half a day's rations of food so they could daven with that sitter? Fools find fault, says Mishle. Wise people find merit. I promise you, if you be a positive person, you bring positive energy, a smile, amazing, to your atmospheres that you walk into. If your baseline is simcha, and it requires work, it's not automatic, it requires work. But if your baseline is energy, you'll be a much happier person. If your baseline is lethargy, is laziness, is schleppiness, is ma'at v'ra'im, negative energy. How do you want your children to see? Kind, upbeat, positive, caring, enthusiastic, happy, or cynical, sarcastic, negative, always looking for that biting one-liner, sneering. The thank you Hashem movement is powerful, is meaningful. I want to share with you, because as I was preparing and thinking a little bit today, I recalled my father, Alav HaShalom, passed away in 2018, ER of 2018. My father had a stroke in 2008. The last 10, 11, no, the earlier than that, 2007. The last 11, 12 years of his life, he had no movement on the left side of his body, essentially. And he was limited. He was limited. For the first couple of years, he was with a cane, then a more sophisticated cane. And the last 2, 3, 4 years of his life, he was in a wheelchair. My father had a lot of positive energy, despite everything. And literally, a day or two after he passed away, I got a note from the wife of my father's best friend since he was a child. And she writes as follows. Rav Shimon, I presume you're on the way back to Israel. I can't tell you how saddened we were to hear of your father's patira. He was the brother that David never had, and I felt like he was my brother-in-law from the moment we met. Among the many special qualities he possessed, he was absolutely unique in the way he was mekabel all of his many difficult yisurim for all these years. But not just mekabel, but mekabel besimcha. I never heard him complain, not once. And remember that he lived with us for a little while, so I saw him every single day. Such simchas achayim. What an inspiration. I miss him already. And she goes on a little bit. But there's different ways to live life. There's different ways to meet your challenges. There's different ways to meet your struggles. And I can tell you that the best way is to work on this avoda of thank you Hashem, of positivity, of bringing positive energy and smiles to the environments that you find yourself in. Okay, that's the first sikha. Second sikha. This sikha is a little bit uncomfortable for me. Not because I'm going to give you hardcore musr or anything else. Not. But I might be misunderstood. It's possible that I'll be misunderstood. And I don't want to be misunderstood. When Yaakov sends when Yaakov is about to go down to Mitzrayim, he sent Yehuda ahead. And Rashi brings, he sent Yehuda ahead to basically put up a yeshiva so that the family would have a place. And Yaakov understood that in Golus, in Mitzrayim, for the Jewish people to survive this period of Golus, they needed a Beis Hora'ah. They needed a yeshiva. What is a yeshiva? So yeshiva is basically a good environment with a good chevra, with rabbeim and shtai. And he felt that was critical. He can't live in a community without a yeshiva. And a critical part of a yeshiva and a Mishnah Pirkei Avos, Asei Lecha Rav, to have a Rebbe. And I want to talk a little bit about how you are Asei Lecha Rav, how you make for yourself a Rebbe. And as I say, I could easily be misunderstood, and I don't want to be misunderstood. But I'm going to tell you what it says in the sources. Bracha Zayinam Abeis. Rav Shimon Bar Yochai says, Godol Shimusha Shel Torah Yoter Milimuda. Which Pashup Shab means it's greater to be Mishamesh, to serve a Talmud Chacham, than to learn from a Talmud Chacham. And the Gemara quotes a Pasuk. Po Elisha ben Shafat Asher Yatzak Mayim Al Yedei Eliyo. Elisha brought water and poured it, served water to Eliyo. Lamad lo amar. I didn't say he learned from Eliyo. Eliyotzak malamet. Eliyotzak. To teach you Godol Shimusha Shel Torah Yoter Milimuda. Who became the leader of Klal Yisrael after Moshe Rabbeinu? It was Yoshua. And Chazal say, there's a Baal HaTurim. There's a Ramban. The Ramban says in the list of the Meraglim that went down, Yeshua is number 5 on the list. The 5th biggest Talmud Chacham. Kalev was ahead of him. And the Baal HaTurim writes there were 6,600 Lamdanim Talmidei Chacham Zakenim that were greater in learning in Torah than Yeshua. So what? Why did Yeshua merit to become the Gadol Hador? What was it about Yeshua? So Chazal tell us, I'm quoting some Midrashim. Just a second. Kuflam, page Kuflam. Chazal tell us, Yeshua is referred to in the Pasuk as the Mishores of Moshe Rabbeinu. He was a nar, even though he was in his 50s, serving Moshe. Huayamashkim umariv havad shalom. He went ahead and arranged in the base medrash of Moshe Rabbeinu the chairs, the safsalim, the place where people would sit. He made sure Moshe had the biggest portion of man, the right portion of man. He made sure Moshe had everything that he needed. And despite the fact there were many who were greater than Yeshua, he is the one who ended up carrying up the mantle. Rav Chaim Shmulevitz writes, the former Rosh Yeshiva, the Meir Yeshiva, V'yeshiroim b'yeshiva shnayim oskim b'torah b'shavim. You might find in yeshiva two people that are learning on the exact same level. Usheim shoktim ala Torah b'al avoda. They're both steiging the same. But he says, I could tell, I have a sense, I could tell. That one of them is going to be a marbit Torah and is going to be mashpia others and is going to instill Yerushalayim in the masses. And the second one is going to accomplish minimal. What's the difference? Ahevdel b'neihem eino ela bazeh. Shaharishon mishamish es rabo. V'sofikis ma'otol shal rabo v'ashkavaso b'chal inyin v'asheni osik b'torah la'atzmo. The first one is Meshamesh his Rav is a sponge that absorbs everything that his Rav says and absorbs his hashkafa in all matters. And the Sheni, and the other one, is just learning. Just learning. Gemara in Sota, Daf Chaf Aleph and Beis, discusses a chassid shote. A chassid shote is a righteous fool. Who is this? Ula. Ula says, Zeh shekara vishana, he learns, he chazers, velo shimesh tamid chacham. And he's not meshamesh tamid chacham. That's called a chassid shote. Rav Elazar has a different name for such a person. He calls him Amoras. Shmuel bar Nachmeni calls him a boor. Another Amora calls him a kusi. And another one calls him a magosh. None of them praiseworthy types. Why is shimush tamid chacham so important? Why is it such a value? So I think the answer is very simple. It's one thing to sit in yeshiva and learn intellectually and absorb the Torah, the knowledge of a Rebbe. That's one thing. And it's a value. But ultimately, what's of even more importance is not just to learn intellectually, but to be connected, to be bonded to one's Rebbe on an emotional level, on a level of seeing how he's living, of seeing his midos, seeing his approach, absorbing his hashkafa. And the way to do that is to be close to him, to watch him. And the way to get close to him is to bring him coffee every day. Get him his lunch. Get him, walk him to the car, whatever it might be to, and that's why I say, I don't want to be misunderstood. It sounds like I'm like service your Rebbe. It's not really what I'm saying. I'm saying it, but I'm saying it for your sake, not for the Rebbe's sake. The Rebbe doesn't need it. I'll read you a Rambam in a second. I have there's a chash of Talmud here, Avi Antel, Shlita. So a couple of weeks ago, he asked me, you know, he sees me every day, I'm very rushed in the morning. Morning's like a pressure cooker. Because I'm here after davening, I'm matpid to not take off my tefillin until after the last Kaddish. I'm matpid. I'm saying that publicly because I think it's worthy of saying. And then I listen to the Chabu, always a treat. And then I got some breakfast meetings oftentimes, and I want to eat a little bit something, and then I got to get my marmokomos, and there's a lot going on for me. That little window, there's a lot going on. So Avi one day, a couple weeks ago, said, can I just pick up your marmokomos for you? And I cannot tell you how much that helped me. Like, it literally saved me, 8-9 minutes in the morning, which to me, 8-9 minutes is an eternity. And now Avi did it as a chesed, but I can tell you as just a human being, as a Rebbe human being, I feel a tremendous sense of gratitude and connection to Avi because he did that chesed for me. And it builds kesher, it builds connection, it builds a relationship. I have my Rebbe is Rav Asher Weiss. Again, I haven't done this in 9 months, 10 months since COVID, but I have how do I have a cash with Rav Asher Weiss? It didn't happen because I call him on the phone every day. I don't. It happened because I became his chauffeur. And you, by becoming his chauffeur and driving him to a shir every Sunday night and spending time with him and, yes, being mishamish him, so that gives access, that gives connection. Now all of a sudden I'm not able to just learn his Torah in the shir, but I can learn how he lives, how he thinks, what is his hashkafas ha'olam is, to the point that when a question comes up, I can already intuit what he's going to answer. I already have a sense of who he is and how he answers and how he thinks, that I have a sense of how he's going to answer. Because you are there with someone you experience. Imagine a surgeon who goes to medical school and does really, really well. And right after medical school is over, he gets his scalpel. But there's no residency. There's no apprenticing. There's no working together under another doctor, watching, training on the job. No, he just studied the books. And now he gets his scalpel and he starts to open people up. That would not make anyone very comfortable. Imagine a mole. Learned Hilchos, he learned all the Shulchan Aruch. Learned all the Halachas. Learned Rav Elazar de Mila, Maseches Shabbos. Knows it all. And now, he's ready for his first job. He's got his Ismail. And he's ready to go. I don't think you'd feel too comfortable with him as your son's Moel. And so not as your Moel. Because you need Shimush to become a practicing Jew, a practicing Moel, a practicing surgeon. You need to be connected. I promised the Rambam, because I want you to, it's easy to get to, like, it's uncomfortable for me to say these things because, like, oh, so now we have to serve our Rabbein or to serve the Rosh Yeshiva. I want you to, it's not what I want you to take away. That's why I'm uncomfortable saying this. But I'm going to read a Rambam. The Rambam writes, Hilchos Talmud Torah, Perek Hei Halacha Ches. Kol Hamalachos, Sheha Eved Ose L'Rabo, Talmud Ose L'Rabo. The Kol Hamoneya Talmido Milasham Shmo. If a Rav prevents his Talmud from being Meshameshim, Moneya Mimenu Chesed, the Rav is preventing his Talmud from doing Chesed, Uporek Mimenu Yirashamayim, and is eliminating Yirashamayim from the Talmud. In other words, somehow the Rebbe has to get himself to the point where he lets the Talmud be Meshamesh, which is an avoda for the Rebbe too. Many years ago, I was in a high school doing bechinas. And I was giving a bechina to a Talmud. And I asked him who the Gemara teacher is. And he tells me, Mishlaf. I said, what? He says, Mishlaf. He says it again, Mishlaf. And I'm like, flabbergasted. And I, you know, I said to him, you mean Rabbi Mishlaf? You mean Rebbe Mishlaf? He goes, no. I mean Miss Shlaf. Miss Shlaf. I said, oh, I didn't chap. Sorry. I said, how old is Miss Schlaf? I don't, 26, 27? That concept of a Gemara teacher, certainly other gender, but even aside from that, a Gemara teacher, that is not what it's all about. The relationship of Rebbe Talmud is a relationship, is a Mesorah relationship, is a relationship of sharing Torah Hashem together, of passing it down from one generation to another. It is a relationship. So yes, it's not a Gemara teacher. It's a Rebbe. And it's a Talmud who are growing together. Who are building. Yeah, Rebbe's building the Talmud, but the Talmud also is working with the Rebbe. It's a relationship. It's a Gemara teacher. And it's certainly not a miss. That doesn't work. It's got to be a relationship of Mesorah, of Shimush, of being together. So, What I do not want to happen is tomorrow I don't want 140 people getting me a cup of coffee. I don't want that. There are many rabbeim in this yeshiva. Many rabbeim in this yeshiva. And I know, there are more of you than rabbeim. But I promise you, your rabbeim want to be there for you. They want to give. They want to overflow in giving. Not just in the classroom, but in every single domain. But now I turn to you and say the way to build that, especially when you outnumber the rabbein, which you always will, always going to be more of you than them, is to figure out a way to be mishamesh, because that's what gets more access. That's what builds relationships. That is how it works. I'll tell you one last, how did I start with Rav Asher Weiss? Some of you know this. I'm a little embarrassed to say. But I didn't have a relationship with Rav Asher Weiss. It's about 9-10 years ago. And Rav David Lovi Shlita asked me, he was teaching in this yeshiva, morning seder, night seder. He says to me, he had a relationship with Rav Asher, and he said, Rav Asher is giving a shir on Sunday nights, and he asked me if I could drive him to the shir. So can I have off on Sunday nights, night seder? And I said, no, you can't, because we have night seder every Sunday nights. You can't, no. And that was that. And then a couple of days later, it hit me. Ooh. Maybe Rav Lovi can hook me up. And I asked Rav Lovi. They didn't plan this. I didn't like, but I asked him, would you all be okay with, maybe I could drive Rav Asher Weiss. And he said, I'll see what I could do. And it was like a Zevit, so like when he didn't have night seder, he could take it and whatever. And I will tell you, I'm going to tell you right now, I don't have a lot of time. I'm a busy guy. I don't say that to T4 myself. I'm a busy guy. It's a fact. As a fact. And there are some Sunday nights, like a lot of Sunday nights, where I don't have 2 hours to drive to Yerushalayim. It's more than 2 hours. 2.5 hours. 3 hours. Drive to Yerushalayim. Go to Ramot. Pick the Rav up. Drive him to the shir. Listen to the shir for an hour. Drive him back. And oftentimes when he'll ask me, oh, do you mind, I have couple of simchas to go to tonight. You mind a wedding here, a shavuot brachas there, and Rebbe, of course, I don't mind. I have all the time in the world, no problem. And I mean it. I have all the time in the world for Rebbe, because again, what I'm gaining from, what I'm getting in a hashkafas hachaim, and yes, it's time. It takes time. It takes energy. It takes effort. But in the past 9-10 months, when I don't have it on that level. And it was a time when this shir might have, there was a chance that it was going to be canceled. And I was like, oh my gosh, what am I going to do now? And so I exhort you. I implore you. I beg of you to reflect, to think how you can go ahead. You can do your part to build your ksham with your abeim. Your abeim want it. All of your abeim. Again, I don't need 140 cups of coffee. And build that kesher. I'm going to call on Hagoyim Yaron Gerzberg Shlita to share a few words.